So it's great to be with you this morning, and I'm interested in this series because it's so practical and so powerful. Liz did such a great job last week talking about singleness and what we need to be doing during that season. Now, it's an important season and a practical season. And we're going to talk a little bit today about a topic that I don't know that I've ever really preached about. But before I do that, I just want to do a little quick test to make sure that we all can kind of get on the same page, because there was this little song that I remember from being a child. And my kids, I can remember them coming home in kindergarten and singing this song, and I don't sing, so I need your help. But maybe you'd be familiar. It always started something like this. Tim and Anita sitting in a tree. Yes. First comes, then comes. Some of you who didn't sing should be ashamed. We all did kind of, we all remember, we're all on that same page. You know what the crazy thing is? For most of us, that was our first explanation of the progression of romantic relationships by the time we were five. Psychologists tell us that our brains develop so quickly in those early years that by the age of five, we've set into motion most of the patterns and ways of thinking that determine how we act for the rest of our lives by the age of five. And most of us as parents are not sitting down with 3- and 4-year-olds to explain the progression of healthy relationships. And so they hear, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby. And that's the best explanation they have that they carry with them through all their lives. And I don't know about you, but I have never walked up to someone and met them and immediately loved them enough to marry them, much less than have a baby with them. So first does not come love. But think about our culture, so twisted, and so many different broken roads lead us into the families that we're in. For some of us, it was love, then baby, and then, you know, I trust you, but I don't trust you, so maybe one day marriage. We'll just figure this out. For others of us, it was baby, and then, well, I might as well marry you because we got this baby, and then we're in church. Dear Jesus, please help me love this woman. Because we don't know what to do. And any number of mixtures bring us to where we're at because we've had this kind of faulty system along the way that didn't really show us the path of godly wisdom from singleness to marriage and children and a family life that is fulfilling and meaningful and reflects the beauty of God's love. Now, before I jump into today, I want to do two things. The first is tell you that I'm leaning heavily on a message by Pastor Michael Todd of Transformation Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Feel free to look it up. He probably preaches it better than I do. But I'm just telling you that's where I'm leaning today. And then remind you of the progression we talked a little bit about last week. We said that things kind of begin for us on this journey in singleness. And Liz did an incredible job to remind us that season is important. It's valuable. It's necessary. It's where we learn to know God and love God. It's where we learn to know ourselves, to love ourselves, because if we don't love ourselves, we're never going to be able to love anyone else well. It's the season when we learn what we care about and what we value. It's a season when we learn about boundaries. Those boundaries that create margins in our time and our finances and our emotions and in our physical health and in our physical relationships. We learn to set those boundaries as an important time that we can't rush through. And too often we're rushing our kids, our teenagers through that season without them having the time to grow in those ways. And it's such an important thing. And I encourage you, if you didn't hear it, to go back and online and listen to that message. And today we're going to talk a little bit about what I'm going to call intentional dating. intentional dating. And this is that season when we start to intentionally look for that companion and partner that will help us to live for God and create a family that reflects His family. And then we, from dating, we'll enter into this season of engagement, where we've made a promise and a commitment to one another, and we begin to deepen our relationship with intimacy and begin to understand one another, begin to know each other in our hearts, what we think, what we believe, and begin to make those commitments to one another in preparation for marriage. And then there's marriage. The day that we make that promise, those vows to one another, we consummate that relationship physically, and we learn to begin to grow in love for one another, to learn one another. And then comes love. So you're like, wait a minute, you said this last week, Pastor, but I'm not sure about this. But really, think about it. 1 Corinthians 13 describes love this way. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith, is always hopeful, endures through every circumstance. So I submit to you, I challenge you to think that perhaps we don't really learn to love that way until we have to share food off our plates, something I'm still not very good at. Until we have to wash someone's laundry or argue over who's going to clean up the mess the dog left in the dining room. And until we're chasing down children and having to give up something we care about for someone else, we don't really know what love is. And the truth is, this kind of love that never fails and always has faith and perseveres through every circumstance, so many of us don't even learn what that love is after we're married. And so then there's love, and then there's kids. Out of that love, we have children. And here's the problem that many of us face. We have children to try to fix our broken love. We deal with it all the time in counseling and working with folks. Is marriage is rocky? Well, let's have a baby. That'll fix it. And instead, it makes everything worse. We think, well, we'll just have another baby. That'll fix it because it worked so well the first time. We have another baby. And it gets worse. And but now we have something else to focus on. So we're dealing with homework, and we're dealing with diapers and meals and schedules and ball teams. We're focused on these kids, and then we got people who are trying to find and fill that hole with their kids. They got this weird codependent relationship with their children that's a whole mess, and somehow they need to be needed and their kids need them, and it's a mess. It's broken. And then comes this time when the kids move out and our project's gone. We look at each other. We can go on a date anytime we want. We can go to the movies 4 times a week if we want. But I don't know you, and I don't want to spend time with you. That's why the divorce rate among 45 and older continues to increase in our culture. And then I added this last one, repeat. Repeat. Because we have to continue to repeat these things over and over again. We have to continue to live out of this season of singleness where we are improving ourselves, continuing to improve ourselves, learning. Maybe take a finance class so that your marriage's money can just be right in order and produce things that you want it to produce. Maybe you go to the gym and take care of yourself so that you can be alive longer with your spouse. Maybe it's just going and reading about how to grow personally, focusing on yourself. We've got to continue to be the best version of us, even after we're married. We're not done improving once we get married. It's not like, well, now I can get fat and wear whatever I want and do whatever I want. I'll just sleep all the time, whatever. And we have to continue to improve. And not only that, we have to continue to date intentionally. See, we have to plan this stuff in our house because, like you, our life gets busy. So we worked it out with another couple who has kids. Like, we watch their kids 1 month, and they go on a date. And then they watch our kids the next month, and we go on a date. And we just planned it out, committed to it for a whole year. And then we work out lunch dates on the other months and different things, and we make it important. So this Friday night, our kids will get shipped off somewhere. And we're going to go on a date. We'll dress up, probably even, like, this is dress up, but, like, I'll dress up. We'll dress up, and we'll go out, and we'll talk. And we're trying to sell our house and move closer to the church, so we'll talk about memories, and we'll talk about things we're dreaming about and hoping for, and it's going to be a great thing, but we've got to choose to do it and be intentional about it. if we don't intend, and you say, well, we don't have the money or the time. You're really not going to have the money to try to figure out a household on half as much income if you don't do it. You're really not going to have time being a single parent if you don't do it. Choose to date intentionally. We have to continue to be engaged and deepening in this relationship. Continue to grow in the love of our marriage like we did at the beginning. Continue to make babies. Maybe not actually make babies, but you know what I mean. Like, you got to continue this stuff. That's Bible. Like, that's, we don't have time to go all into that today, but we're going to talk about intentional dating instead. That way we talk about none of that. We're going to talk about intentional dating. We got to talk about it because nobody's talking about it. We don't know how to talk about it, so we just don't. We just send our kids out to start dating it at 16 or 14 or 12 or 11 or 8. And they got their little boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. And they're starting to get emotionally entangled with other people. We don't talk about it. We talk about how cute it is and ask them what they're doing, maybe. We end up with train wrecks. And some of us are here, we're like, well, I'm married. I've already done that. I don't need to really think about it. Well, if you're married, you really need to think about it or you might be in trouble. And if you have kids, you need to think about it even more because somebody needs to teach them a path that's better than love, marriage, baby carriage, right? Somebody needs to teach them a better path. If you have grandkids, if you have any connection with any of the teenagers or children in this church, then we need to hear this. We need to deal with some of the myths about dating and the truths about dating so that we can date intentionally in a way that will take us to where we really want to be. See, so many of us as parents or as grandparents, we look at our kids or we look at the people in our community and we think, man, or maybe it's that little niece or nephew. And they bring that boy. They bring that boy home. And they think, I sure wouldn't pick him. I thought I raised her better than that. He's got no job, no prospects, no education, no effort. And she wants to date him. She wants to date him long enough she's introducing him to me. I thought I raised her better than that. And you look at that little boy, he brings home that girl whose clothes stayed in the dryer an extra 2 hours too long. You know what I mean? There you go. And you think, I thought I taught him better than this, my little innocent boy. And maybe you did teach him better. Maybe you taught him to love God and you taught him to love themselves and you taught him about science and math, but you didn't teach him how to pick right. See, there's always somebody in your family who knows how to pick fruit. It's not me. But if I go to the grocery store, the need on Mondays like we do a lot of times, then we'll go to the fruit and the vegetable. We'll go to the vegetable stand on the side of the road, and she'll pick up those things. She's checking different sides of it. She's shaking it and knocking on it and squeezing it. And she knows how to pick fruit to figure out which fruit is right. And which fruit is ripe and when it's the right time. I go buy bananas and they're half green and I think they'll turn yellow and they stay green for 2 weeks and then we have to, then they're brown. But when I go with her, she shows me how to pick fruit. She shows me how to pick ripe. Teaches me how to check that avocado to make sure it's ready. So it'll make good guacamole that night, not 3 weeks from now. See, the problem is we just aren't teaching our kids how to pick right. And it's time that we understand today, is what we're going to do, is talk a little bit about how to pick right so that we can share that information, so we can have that information. If we're teenagers or young adults, if we're in this dating scene again that we maybe never thought we would be, how do we pick right this time? Let's look at Hosea chapter 4, verse 6. If you have your Bibles, you can turn there, use your phone, whatever you like. We'll just be there for a moment. It says this, my people are destroyed from a lack of knowledge because they've rejected knowledge. I love the Message version of this, Hosea 4:6. My people are ruined because they don't know what is right or true. And that's it. We've got to learn what is right and true when it comes to building relationships in ways that will last. So that's where we're going this morning. We're going to unpack four myths and some truths that go along with them on how we can pick right. And the first myth is this. There is a biblical way of dating. dating is not biblical. There are no verses on dating anywhere. You can Google it. You can maybe try to make something work. But there are no verses on dating. No stories about dating in Scripture. There are stories about a guy riding up and choosing a woman who happened to give his horses or his animals water, and now that's going to be his wife. Like, but there are no stories of dating. It is not a biblical topic. And this is a struggle for some of us because we as good Christian young men and women, we go and we look to Scripture because that's supposed to be our guide. We look for that stuff on dating and there's nothing there. But we see there's a lot of stuff on marriage, so we just figure, well, we got to get married as fast as we can so then we'll know what to do. And here's the problem. We didn't pick right, so now we're trying to apply all of this knowledge and wisdom about marriage, but we got the wrong ingredients and we're mixing it up and this cake is just nasty. Because we got the wrong ingredients. We got fruit in there that just wasn't right. And it's time that we learn to pick right. And the way we do that is take the godly biblical wisdom and principles of Scripture and apply them to our dating relationships. Because while Scripture says nothing about dating, it says a lot about the company we keep, the kind of character that we should gather around us. It says a lot about boundaries in our relationships and in our lives. Talks about these guide rails that we can put into place that keep us on the path so that we don't lean on our understanding, but we allow Him to guide us. You see, dating, courtship, all that stuff really began about 200 years ago as a way for two people to figure out if they were a good match to be married. And it started out as courtship, and you had mommy and daddy right there in the middle. So every time you got together, you have mommy and daddy right there. You talk about, like, if you want to kiss, you got mommy and daddy in the middle. You want to hug, you want to do anything else, mommy and daddy in the middle. So you end up with no levels of intimacy, and you have marriages that struggled. And dating kind of began, and now you have those who are dating in all kinds of different ways, and we'll get into that a little bit. But as a way for two people to get to know each other, and begin to understand whether they might be a good fit and they could choose to build this life together. So date, court, let mama pick your spouse, whatever you want to do, that's fine. But here's the key. God has to be in the center of it. See, too many of us, what we do is we go after what we want and ask God to surround it, instead of asking God to be the center and letting everything else surround Him. We need God at the middle. And this brings us to that second myth. Some of you are thinking, man, that's fast. Maybe this will be good. The second myth is this, that dating is wrong. Some of you think, well, I never thought that. Well, and that's good. But there was a time when I was a youth pastor, and there was this book that came out, I Kissed Dating Goodbye. And this little moron with acne still on his face decided he was going to write a book about how dating was bad. And it sold millions of copies, and Christian teenagers all around the world thought dating was bad. Dating is not wrong. However, it will go wrong without God in the middle. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whatever you do, dating, not dating, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. He has to be in the middle. But see, most of us, we don't do it that way. We get into these relationships. We see that guy, we see that girl, we meet her at that party or that bar, or maybe if we're lucky at church, you know, we meet them somewhere and we decide, oh, I kind of think they're cute. We check out their social media, their Instagram, you know, and it's all clear. And then we start to talk to them. We get into this relationship. We start dating. Date one, suddenly we think we're in a relationship, changing Facebook status and taking selfies together, and it's so great. And then we realize this thing's all jacked up. I can't get them to go to church with me. They don't care anything about God. And then they're like, I have this purpose and this passion in my life, but somehow when I'm with them, I'm getting robbed of it. But yet we're all entangled, and we love this person. So God bless this mess. Or you get later in life and you got this guy who's dating this woman. She's still married. But she's going to leave him. And she'll come, Pastor, I want you to pray a blessing on our relationship. It's like, but I can't do that. It won't work. I mean, I can say words, but God's not going to answer that prayer. And that's what we do. I mean, we can laugh, but we've all prayed those backwards prayers, right? I'm doing what I want. God bless it. Surround it. Surround it. Not you be in the middle and lead the way. And that's what we do in these relationships. And that's where it gets all wrong and twisted. And what we really need is to go back to 1 Corinthians 10:31 and put God at the center. Make it so it's glorifying him. You see, dating is like an interview process for a really good job. Here's what I mean. I think it's a really good job to work at Hydrant Church. And so we have kind of an intensive process. You send me your resume. I'll look over it. If we like it, we'll invite you in for, we won't even invite you in. We invite you to take some assessments, personality tests, assessments, spiritual gifts tests, all that. Before we ever talk to you, we'll send you an email. Because we don't want to get emotionally entangled yet. Right? So we look at all that information. If it's all right, then I'll talk to you one-on-one. And I'll ask you some basics about what you believe and what you think and what it is that you value and care about. And if you make it past interview one, then you get interview two. And that's with the staff. And we're looking for chemistry. Can you fit with this family? Will you be a good fit and partner in this? And will it go well together? And if you pass that one, then you get a third interview where you meet the whole family and you interview with the advisory team, and then we make a decision. When we trust that process and we ask the right questions and weed out the wrong people, we end up with amazing staff like Pastor Liz and Pastor Anita. When we rush that process because we're desperate, we've ended up with people and staff who ended up hurting us and moving us the wrong way. Dating is like the second interview. Hear me. Dating is like the second interview. And for some of us, because we were a little desperate and a little lonely, we've let some people pass the first interview who weren't qualified. They weren't qualified. We checked out their resume. We looked at Facebook. We looked at Twitter. We looked at Instagram and thought, okay, this is all right. And then we went out on a date, which a date is great. It is an event. You go on it. It ends. You look back on it and reflect and decide what you think about it. It's over. And then maybe you go on another date or you do not. But that first date, maybe that first couple of dates is like interview number one. And you're trying to figure out if you can and maybe be with this person. Like, can I stand their smell? When we sit across the table, do they eat like a horse and drink water like a dog? Because if that's it, we got a problem. And those are funny, but they're for real. You don't want... A slurper might be difficult in 15 years. But then you ask about what they believe. What are their priorities? What drives them? What do they care about? What are their boundaries? Where does God fit into this? And listen to me. The answers to those questions, all of them, from smell and slurping to beliefs, are key. And there are some of us who have been letting people pass the first interview who are slurpers, who don't believe what we do, who don't care about what we care about, who should never made it past the first interview. But now we've got them in the second interview and we're dating. We've been dating for a while and it's wrecking our purpose, it's killing our vision, it's hurting us in so many different ways because they don't belong in the company. They don't belong in the family. This is not the right fit for them. And we got into the mess because we got a little lonely. We got a little scared. We got a little nervous. Some of us we didn't even do it on purpose. We didn't even realize we were interviewing. We just kind of accidentally stumbled into it. We were just hanging out again and again and again and again and again every week. And then suddenly we look and say, oh, we got this bond. I'm emotionally tied and connected to this person. You're going to get emotionally tied and connected to anybody of the opposite sex you spend that much time with. So don't spend that much time with somebody who doesn't make it past the first interview, who doesn't fit, who doesn't belong in your life, who doesn't bring the best out of you, who doesn't make you dream bigger, believe bigger, hope bigger, go after God more fiercely. Don't get tied up with somebody who doesn't long for the presence of God. Don't let them pass the first interview. It doesn't mean you're mean. Man, this just isn't working.
But don't keep playing. Don't keep dating. God's got to be at the center of it. It's all got to be for the glory of God. And if they're not about the glory of God, then they not need to make it past that first interview. Some good questions. Does this person I'm dating, do they reflect the glory of God? Do they pursue God? Does their life honor God, reveal love for God? Are they passionate about the things of God? Does how we are dating reflect the glory of God? That's your second question. Like, are you hanging out in the back of the car in a dark parking lot? Saying like, you know what I'm talking about. Sneaking out of her apartment in the morning. Would you be embarrassed if your mother read the text messages between you? That's good. What about your pastor? Would you be able to talk to someone about Jesus if they saw how you dated? Because if not, maybe it's not for the glory of God. Maybe it's not someone you should be dating. Let's move on, because that one's getting a little personal. Number three. Dating is just harmless fun. Just about having fun. See, the truth is that dating in the wrong timing or without God in the center can be devastating and destructive. Right out of high school in late 1997, I met this young lady and we began to date. She never made it past interview one, but she did, and we kept dating. Kept dating. Other people in the company, family, other people that with insight, my family said, I think there's some yellow flags. I think there may be some red flags. Hey, Tim, are you sure about this? Nice way like you guys do. No, be mean. Hey, idiot, this ain't gonna work. Somebody should have said that to me. And maybe they did, and I was too much of an idiot to hear them. Because, you know, we in love. And it's great. It's great. And 3 years into the marriage, she walked out and never walked back in. Talk about passion being gone. My dream of leading in ministry was nearly lost with that single word, divorced. It cost me jobs. For the next 2 years, I delivered pizzas and folded clothes and stocked shelves and whatever I had to do that wasn't this. I thought I may never get back into it. Devastated, broken. It was destructive to my dreams and my passion and who I was meant to be. It robbed me of that. Dating in the wrong time or without God in the middle can be life-altering. I mean, how many of us, maybe we're a little older, a little wiser, able to look back and say, we invested time and energy and care and maybe even a whole lot of like, said love into someone who just hurt us. Someone who was robbing us of our dreams and our vision, what it is that we had in our lives that were pulling us away from God. Proverbs 14:12, and this was me right down to the word. The path seems right, but leads to destruction. The path seems right. The world around us says this is the pathway, and it seems right, but it is leading to destruction of our dreams, our purpose, our passion, our vision, our finances, our hopes, our families. So much of us, some of us, our bodies, our very selves being destroyed because of something we thought it was right. This is why we don't just keep dating for fun. I kind of like this person. We keep hanging out. We're having fun. Because you get all emotionally tied in and then you can't think straight. Hormones get involved and you really can't think straight. And it always costs you more than you're prepared to spend. Scripture is very clear that those whom we align our lives with matters. It's important who we let into our lives. It matters, and especially if we let them all the way into our lives. This is not a game. It's not just for fun. You should have fun dating, but it's not what it's all about. There is a goal to intentionally dating, dating with a purpose. 1 Corinthians 15, 33 and 34 says this, "Don't be fooled. Bad company corrupts good character." Bad company corrupts good character. Don't waste your time with bad company. Then it says this, think carefully about what is right. Think carefully about what is right. When it comes to dating, think carefully. Don't let yourself be caught up in the emotion and the excitement of the moment and the day, rushing ahead of things and getting too deeply into something that you can't get out of. That you're struggling to know how to get out of and you're afraid, or then it gets your thoughts all twisted. Right? Think carefully. You know what it means to think carefully as well? Get good advice. Look, if the people who know you best say, hey, I think this person might be bad for you, they're probably bad for you. Because your parents, your friends probably know you better than you know yourself. And you're willing right now to compromise all of these things because you love this person. Maybe you love the outdoors, but they got allergies. And no medicine's making any difference. And you think, well, I can just give up being outdoors. It's no big deal. And 5 years later, you're dying because the very thing that gave you breath is taken away. Or maybe you love sports and they can't stand anything about it. Or any number of things. And you realize one day you sacrificed something that you really cared about. You sacrificed maybe a value. For some of us, it gets even deeper. God is at the center of our lives. But this person, they're not sure what they believe. You know, they think there's a God, but, you know, he's out there. It's just not that important to them. And you think, well, that'll be okay. I'll win them. You know, I can reach them. Bad company corrupts good character. Look, be their friend. Reach to them, love them, win them, whatever. Don't date them. Don't date them. That's just stupid. Think carefully about what is right. And then he says, stop sinning. Just stop sinning. See, some of us want God to bless this thing that we keep sinning. Let's just apply that bigger to all of our lives, right? Like, not even just our dating lives. Sometimes we want God to pour in some blessing on us while we just keep this sin going right underneath the surface. Like, oh, it's no big deal. It's not that big. I got the big things covered. But we keep this sin right here in our life. We keep cultivating, keep allowing it to be there. And he's telling us, Paul's writing to the church in Corinth, he says, stop sinning, then ask God what to do, then ask God to bless it, then ask God to lead you. But you got to stop the sinning stuff. Got to date intentionally with the goal in mind. Look, ask yourself, where is this relationship taking me? And if it's not a good place, if you can't see where it's taking you, then chances are it's taking you somewhere you don't want to go. That brings us to the fourth myth, final myth, that dating is a destination. Dating is a destination. See, dating is not a destination. Dating is the transportation to get you to a relational destination. So let me just like lay it out. If you're not ready to be married, then it's not the time to be dating. That's the time to be single, to be intentionally single, working on yourself, growing in yourself, becoming the best version of who you are, becoming who God made you to be. It's the time to be single. And you say, but I got to date. I got to date to figure out what I like. Like, I got to figure out the kind of people I maybe want to be with. That's just stupid. Premature dating only leads to unnecessary emotional wounds and heartache. Think back. Think back to high school. All of it ends in hurt. How many of us have emotional scars from dating before we should have been dating? Right? In high school, I didn't even know who I was. How was I going to get to know somebody else? Let's be honest. In my early 20s, how was I going to get to know somebody else? Listen. Those of you in middle school and high school, if you're not ready to partner with someone in doing life, young ladies, if you're not ready to let a man lead you, if you're not ready to walk with them and support them and be beside them and sacrifice for them, don't be dating. Young man, if you're not ready to lead and protect and provide and guide a family, don't waste no woman's time with your dating. You're not ready. Don't date. Some of you are trying to, you're trying to turn me off right now. Done. You're done. You think I'm crazy. But look, I'm not even going to say look in your own family tree, but look at your friends. Look at your friends. Look at their moms and dads. You want that? Do you want that? You want that drama? You want that brokenness? You want that whining and that heartache and that pain in your life? Then just do exactly what they did and just keep dating like it's no big deal. Dating without any purpose or intentionality or goal in mind. Just dating because it's fun and see what happens. And start as early as you want. Might as well start at 8. Have a little girlfriend. Dating is not a destination. If you've been dating somebody for 10 or 15 years, you got a problem, not a relationship. Let's be straight. If you ask the person you're dating with or hanging out with or whatever, where do you see this going? And you get that vague, foggy look. And they say something like, well, maybe one day. Let me tell you, one day is today. Your life matters too much. God has put something too big in you. He has vision and purpose and plan for your life that is too big to waste on some joker who said, well, maybe one day, I don't know. That's just stupid. It is not worth your time and your energy and sacrificing who you're meant to be. Dating is like that little tram in a big airport. Listen to me. So think about big airports like Atlanta, not RDU, but like Atlanta, Chicago, New York. Think about it. And in these airports, you arrive on the plane, you arrive in Concourse A, and you might have to get to Concourse C to get on the next plane. So you jump out and run, you get on this little train. I don't know if you ever noticed the train, there's two seats, one on the end and one on the other end. And then there's a rail or something you hold on to. You know why there's no seats? Because you're not supposed to stay on it. But it takes you to where you get onto the next thing to go to your final destination. It is simply the transportation. Don't be the fool who rides the tram round and round and round and round. There's no place to sit. That's why it gets a little uncomfortable when you've been dating for too long, with no purpose or plan or where it's going. Listen, one time I got on the tram going the wrong direction. Got going the wrong direction. You know what I did? The first time it stopped, I got off. Some of you are in relationships going the wrong direction. Been dating somebody going the wrong direction. Maybe you've been looking at this going the wrong direction. It's time just to get off. Be single again. Start working on you, being who you need to be. It's okay to get off. It is not worth staying on something that's going to take you somewhere you don't want to go. Take you in the wrong direction and will not get you to the final destination. So let me boil this down quickly. Intentional dating. First, date with God at the center. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Glorifying God in everything that we do. He's got to be at the center of how we live our lives, how we date, how we build this relationship, not only in the center of my life and their life, but in the center of how we date so that our actions honor Him. Our actions reflect the priorities of God, that reflect the love of God, that reflect the sacrifice and the discipline of Jesus Himself. That it's got to reflect this with Him at the center and everything emanating out of that. Not God surround this mess we've made, but emanating from there. And number two is align yourself with people with character who are passionate about the things that are important to you. Doesn't mean you have to like all the same stuff. See, we made a deal when we got married. Deals work sometimes. Now that Noah's getting older, the deal's kind of fading a little bit. But anyway, I'll tell you about it. She's not really into sports. I watch it all the time because I don't care about watching other things. But Duke basketball is an uncompromising value in the Fox household. So we just made a deal. And I knew, she didn't know then, that every Duke game is televised for some unknown reason. Every single one of them. So we just made a deal. I'll watch every Duke game that comes on TV no matter what else is going on. I'm going to stop doing it. I don't care if I'm doing dishes, cleaning the floor, or a baby's diaper needs changed. I get to watch the game. And then I won't watch other sports. And then now Noah's coming along, getting into football and basketball and soccer. And They're on somehow. But that worked for us because there were pieces that were important and pieces that weren't. So it doesn't mean you got to like all the exact same stuff. Don't misunderstand. But people who care about what you care about. If you like being outdoors, you want to be with somebody who likes being outdoors. If you're a homebody, you don't want to have the constant tension of people who are exact opposite, pulling on each other all the time. So be wise. Think about how you fit together and if you can fit together. And don't get so entangled too early that you can't think smart. Number three, boundaries and guide rails keep you on the path. Proverbs 4:23, guard your heart above all else. Here's what you need. Like when you take little kids bowling, they put these bumpers in the gutters. You know what I'm talking about? Not if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Put the bumpers in the gutters. That way, when they throw that ball down, no matter how poorly they throw it, they can't miss. Right? We need those guardrails around our heart, around our lives, around our time, around our money, around our energy, around our beliefs, so that no matter how we throw that ball down, it hits the target. Those guardrails keep us on the path, leaning not on our understanding, but trusting in Him so that He'll direct our paths. And number four, let people help teach you to pick good fruit. Invite people into your dating relationship. Double date with an experienced married couple who has the kind of marriage you want one day, and let them speak into you. You don't even have to ask questions. You can if you want, but just be around them. And you'll start to see things and you'll start to notice things that are important. Don't go hanging out with your friends who got broken relationships. Right? They don't know what to tell you. Don't go get advice from the person who has been divorced 18 times. They don't know. If they did, they wouldn't be divorced 18 times. Right? Think about it. Get good advice from wise people. For those who walk in the counsel of the wise become wise. Philippians 2:13-14, this is it. For God is working in you, giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases Him. God is working in you. And when we invite Him to work in us, then what He does first is give us the desire to please Him in every area of our lives, in our relationships, our marriages, our dating, our singleness. He gives us the desire, but the beautiful thing is He doesn't just give us desire. He then gives us the power to do what pleases Him. Do everything without complaining and arguing so that no one can criticize you. Listen, live clean, innocent lives as children of God, shining like bright lights in a world full of crooked and perverse people. This is my prayer for those of you who are dating, for those of you who are married and are going to intentionally date your spouse, for those who teach the next generation to date, is that the dating relationships that come out of Hydrant Church or connected to Hydrant Church will be like a bright light shining in Goldsboro and Wayne County and all around for what relationships could be, that they're lived with innocence and purity and beauty and joy that produces this shining light that is a wonderful thing to see and a guide for others. When we go to Him, He gives us the desire to please Him, the power to please Him. So date in a way that's clean and innocent and shines a bright light. And do it on purpose. Don't stumble into it. And that's the pathway that will lead us from healthy singleness to the kind of engagement and marriage and family we really want. Let's pray.